I'm telling everyone what to do. I'm telling people on my team. I'm telling ChatGPT. You know, I'm just giving a lot of instructions right now. And so, I mean, what's been kind of interesting is just noticing the parallels of when you're a CEO telling people what they need to be doing, telling ChatGPT what I need it to do. And I think it's just very cool for everyone to have the opportunity. You can have like 10 AIs working for you and be the CEO of your own virtual group of AIs. I think a big positive of AI and automation is that all the stuff that people don't like doing for the most part is going to get automated because it's just so repetitive. But instead, I think people will have the chance to just do all that work at a snap of their fingers. You know, people will feel more like executives because they'll be able to just command all of this different work to get done for them, which I think is going to be very exciting for people.
Hi, I'm Boaz, founder and CEO of Simply Augmented, and I'm excited that you're tuning in to Shift AI, a show that explores what it takes to thrive and adapt to the changing workplace in the digital age of remote work and AI. In today's episode, I'm thrilled to have Sarah Nagy as our guest. Sarah is the CEO of Seek.ai and is on a mission to be the leader in the field of analytic AI and query-based search. If you're someone interested in the way that AI is making it easier for businesses to query their internal data, you're not going to want to miss this episode. We are honored to have Sarah on our podcast, and we can't wait to learn more from her. Let's get to it. All right, Sarah, thank you for being on the Shift AI podcast. I am really excited to talk with you today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on.
So Sarah, one of the things that I was most interested in talking to you about was your past in the financial sector and some of the work that you did. So can you tell the audience a little bit about your pre-AI history and some of the work that you've done leading up to your new company?
Yeah, so I actually got into finance. You know, that was my first job, was a quantitative analyst at a firm called ITG, doing basically high-frequency trading execution algorithms. So yeah, that was kind of how I started out. But actually before that, I came from the astrophysics world. So I was working at UCLA and Caltech, looking at very distant galaxies that we were, you know, collecting information from the Hubble Space Telescope. So I kind of, you know, made this pivot and, you know, kind of started my career in the industry in quantitative finance. And so I kind of started out, you know, as a quantitative analyst, but, you know, around, I would say 2015, 2016, that's when I started getting really interested in these things that were kind of a bunch of buzzwords at the time, like, you know, so-called big data or machine learning, yeah, which is still a buzzword. So I kind of became more of a data scientist, ended up leading a couple of data teams at some startups, actually, and then ended up going to Citadel and leading a data team there, basically looking at a lot of very unusual kind of data sets in the finance world. It's called alternative data. Things like, you know, if you've ever read about like, oh, this hedge fund is hiring, you know, quants to look at cars and parking lots and satellite data. Like, yeah, that was basically me. So I had all sorts of fun data sets to work with.
That's great. I mean, I'm interested to know, you know, you were so deep into data when you were in the financial sector. How did you think about making the transition? You're now the CEO of Seek.ai, and Seek is one of the fastest growing AI companies. And you just told me recently that you guys made the top list for being able to scan data analytically. Can you talk a little bit about your path and journey to being the CEO of Seek, and then also some of the recent accomplishments that you guys have had?
Yeah, sure. So basically, pretty much every job that I had, I kind of just kept running into the same pain point. You know, in my world, what I was really excited about was being able to explore all these different kinds of data sets and really get focused and, you know, find alpha and kind of recommend like, oh, let's put a trade on. And, you know, what I honestly really wanted to do was make a lot of money for the business and hopefully increase my own income as well. Yeah. And so, you know, that just didn't really end up being reality for most of my day. Like, no matter where I was, I just found that I always had to spend a significant amount of my day just helping the non-technical people get just basic access to data. You know, I give them tools to, you know, hope that they could just access the data themselves, but the tools just didn't work that well. Like, they just were not very accessible, not really easy to use. So basically, all these non-technical colleagues would keep coming up to me and asking me questions. And I'd have to just write a lot of just very, very basic code, often in SQL, which, to be honest, was my least favorite language because it was just like very basic math that I was doing. And I was just like kind of pulling data for them all day. And I'll tell you something that was kind of funny. Like, sometimes they would ask me like, hey, Sarah, can you build this tool for me that I can just use to get the data myself?
Yeah.
So I'd spend like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks building a tool like that. I'd give it to them. And then they'd come up to me the next day and be like, hey, remember that tool you built? Can you just go in there and get this data? And I'd just be like, oh my gosh, like, I built this for you. So that was kind of the problem that I kept running into. And, you know, I just kind of came to this realization, like, non-technical people can't use these tools, but what they are really, really good at is asking me questions. Like, that's something they can do very well.
Yeah.
So around 2020, that's when I first encountered large language models that could do code generation. And so the thing that was so interesting was that you could actually ask these models questions. And not just that, but they could do things like generate code. And so I was like, okay, these models are doing like the exact same thing that I'm doing and, you know, could actually be accessible by non-technical people, but do all this stuff on the back end that I really don't want to be doing. So that essentially was, you know, the genesis of Seek. So quit my job around 2021, spent a lot of time just researching large language models. And then later in 2021 was when I started Seek. So our mission is provide a natural language interface that basically anybody and everyone in a business can use to just ask those same questions that they're so used to asking the data team. But there's just a lot of benefits from using Seek instead. You can get the answers faster. You can ask way more follow-up questions to get to kind of the heart of what you're trying to get at. And you don't have to bug the data team so that, you know, they can work on the stuff that they kind of thought that they would be working on in their careers.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What I think is so cool about what you're doing is that you're using large language models to talk to your data, but then you have Seek models that are basically doing analytical AI. So there's no kind of typical generative AI that's happening except for the fact that it's using natural language to talk to your data. And I think that's really powerful. Can you talk a little bit about some of the ways on the analytical AI side that you guys are maximizing the ability to do it quickly or do it more accurately?
Yeah, I think that's something that's kind of interesting about the way you phrased that question is kind of where does the generative AI come in? Because we're so used to, you know, talking to ChatGPT and having it generate text back for us. So when you think of Seek, like, yes, we are a so-called generative AI company, but how exactly are we generative AI? What we're actually kind of generating is data, like in the form of you can get a table back when you ask Seek a question, or you can get a chart back. And you can also get some, you know, natural language description of what's going on in the data and how it was calculated and kind of even the lineage of the data being queried. But actually, I think a good kind of follow-up remark there is how is that data getting generated in the first place? And so it's kind of like, I think the thing that's kind of nuanced here is that it's also just the fact that generative AI is also really good at listening. It's not just good at generating, but what you're inputting into the AI is natural language. So that's like a key piece because it has to understand what you're asking it. And then from there, that's when we do all the code generation, which we use to query the data and produce this output.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So just to step back one second, I'm just curious because your background is so interesting and the work that you've done in finance and in space. How did you get to this point? Was your family, were they scientists? You know, did you talk about data and technology at the dinner table? Can you take me back a little bit and tell me how you got so involved in this?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm just kind of laughing because I do have colleagues. I've had colleagues here and there who are like, you know, my mom was a data scientist or like, you know, my dad is a data scientist. I'm a little too old to have parents that were involved with data. But my dad was a hardware engineer, like a chip engineer in the Silicon Valley. And my mom was a journalist. So yeah, I grew up in the Silicon Valley, basically South Bay. We moved to LA, you know, a little later, but that's really where I grew up. So I was definitely surrounded by, you know, tech. I had exposure to things when I was younger that were very interesting. Like my favorite place in the world was probably, you know, either Fry's. If you know, you know. I don't know if Fry's is around anymore.
Oh, yeah. I remember Fry's.
Yeah, I just loved Fry's. You know, I would just like play the games there, like, you know, whatever. I loved the Tech Museum in San Jose. So, yeah, I definitely, you know, definitely was exposed to a lot of really cool tech when I was growing up.
So you must be really excited about what's been happening in the last couple of years in the tech space. I mean, it seems like there's so much buzz around AI, and non-technical people are getting pretty excited about it because they see the opportunities. But for someone that's been around technology for a long time, can you just talk to the audience about, from your perspective, why you think there's been so much excitement and buzz, how that plays into what you've been doing for many years, and how, as you look into the future, this is going to play out for you at Seek?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this is the first time that people are excited about AI. I think it really, you know, it has its summers and its winters, and we're kind of in another summer right now. So, you know, why is that the case? It's because large language models were a breakthrough, and it's very exciting. We've had other breakthroughs in the past. Like, I think before large language models, the big breakthroughs were in computer vision in the, you know, the early 2010s. But large language models were a breakthrough. I mean, mm-hmm. You can see it quantitatively on benchmarks, like MMLU, for example. But you can also see it when you interact with them. Like, you know, never before has there been a so-called chatbot that could, you know, pass the Turing test, so to speak. I know the Turing test is kind of controversial benchmark, but I'm just saying, Everyone knows what it is, you know, and everybody can see with their own eyes, like, this thing is passing the Turing test. And that's a really, really big deal.
Can you, for the audience that doesn't know what the Turing test is, can you explain to them what it is?
Oh, sure. Well, in, I guess, layperson's terms, it's, can you talk to an AI and not realize it's an AI? And it feels like talking to a human and you can't tell the difference. It is a bit controversial. Like, I've talked about it with folks from our ML team here at Seek. And, you know, I've been told, like, that's not a good benchmark. Like, don't talk to us about the Turing test. But I do think it's kind of helpful to talk about because it's probably one of the most widely known benchmarks. And we all know and love Alan Turing. So, yeah, but it's a big deal. Like, that's never happened before large language models. And so that's why ChatGPT was such a phenomenon, because never before were you able to talk to chatbot and feel like you were talking to a human, not just a human, but a human with access to all of the internet, basically.
And now, before we dive deeper, I want to take a quick moment and tell you a little bit about one of our podcast partners. As a listener of this show, I know you're trying to stay on top of all things AI and tech, which is why you have to check out the amazing GeekWire podcast, produced by GeekWire and hosted by Todd Bishop. It's a treasure of insights featuring industry leaders and the latest tech trends that are shaping our world, and the perfect companion podcast to Shift AI. GeekWire Podcast is where technology meets curiosity and covers the world of technology, startups, and geek culture. Expand your tech horizons and join the conversation. Tune into the GeekWire podcast today, a perfect complement to our own discussions here. Don't miss out. Follow the GeekWire podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite listening app. Now back to the episode. Speaking of benchmarks, I heard recently that Seek passed a benchmark related to speed. Can you tell the audience about that and what happened recently?
Yeah, so Seek recently achieved state-of-the-art performance on a benchmark called Spider. Spider is the most well-known academic benchmark for measuring natural language to SQL translation. You know, SQL is the language of databases, and that's what we do really, really well, is query databases with natural language. So we are the first model ever to surpass 90% accuracy on Spider. We're still the number one model as of this podcast, you know, the only model to be above 90%. And if you look at other research labs, you know, on that leaderboard, you know, it's pretty much every like top tech company you can think of. So we were really happy that we were able to do this. I think it just kind of shows we're a really, really small team, but we're also just, you know, very smart and very focused on this specific problem that we're solving.
So when you think about the speed of being able to query data, do you also think about the hallucinations or the risks of getting bad data back from the system? That's something that with generative AI, we hear all the time, getting bad answers, it not listening, it having conviction when it gives you bad answers. How do you think about that in terms of data? And how do you talk to businesses who are concerned about the risks associated with large language models?
I mean, in our line of work, there's basically no room for error. It, you know, Seek needs to be incredibly precise in order for it to actually work, because you can't ask it questions about your business and get bad data back. When I was at Citadel, like I would have gotten in a lot of trouble if I had, you know, pulled some data for someone and it was bad and they made a trade and lost millions of dollars. Like that would have been, you know, beyond unacceptable. So I you know, was trained like throughout my career. I developed a very, very healthy, you know, healthy would be an understatement. I would say it was almost unhealthy paranoia about making sure that data was precise. So, you know, it's like when I came across large language models for the first time, that was like my first thought. I was like, okay, this isn't always going to be right. So what can I do to basically like get the upside of what these models can do, but, you know, mitigate the downside? So some of the kind of guardrails that we have in our system are, you know, one thing we have is a human in the loop workflow. If you're an organization that's really, really paranoid about bad data, you know, basically Seek will just have a QA process where it can be overseen by the experts. And we try to make that process as kind of user-friendly as possible so that even the QA process is, you know, a good experience for the experts. You know, the other thing is we do have confidence levels. So you can actually, you know, get certain confidence estimations from the model. So if it's really, really high confidence, you know, you can actually get the data back much faster than if it's lower confidence. So those are a couple things that we have in the system that can help protect against it.
So as you think about the future, looking ahead, what's bringing you a lot of energy around the business? And what are the things that is getting you most excited about Seek right now? Maybe you can share a little alpha with us about what's out there, you know, in your mind with Seek that nobody else knows about.
Sure. Well, I think this is actually the first time I'm talking about the confidence scores on a podcast. So this is, I don't even think we've done the press release for that yet. So this is kind of a sneak peek into that feature.
Awesome.
Yeah. But I would say, you know, what else am I excited about? I mean, I was just at a conference speaking last week. And, you know, this was the Battlefin conference, which is for hedge funds and data vendors. And I had also gone a year ago. And this year was just a totally different reaction to natural language querying. A lot more people just knew what we were doing, you know, already had initiatives to do natural language querying in their businesses. And it's not just in the hedge fund world, you know, which is, like I said, it's where I came from. But we're seeing this like all over the finance industry. We're seeing this in healthcare, SaaS, you know, tech companies. So it's been a very exciting January for us in terms of just how much more interest there is in 2024, even versus 2023.
Yeah, that's great to hear. That's exciting. So as you think about your past and the people that you worked with that helped you along the way, can you talk about your mentors and, you know, in the different businesses or throughout your education that come to mind and that you think about today as you're making decisions about your business?
Yeah. I mean, I've had so many mentors just throughout my career that, you know, I definitely can't name them all, but it's probably in the dozens, if not hundreds at this point. Not to mention all of the parasocial mentors I've had, people who are famous that I've never met, but just, you know, listen to their podcasts or, you know, read their books. So they're both people I know and also parasocial relationships, which I'm kind of joking, but I think it's like kind of a funny way to phrase that. So I would say, you know, out of the mentors, just kind of the highlights. I mean, I was talking about this, you know, recently. I had a mentor when I was in college named Joanna, who really helped me kind of understand the limitations of my education, actually, because I didn't just study astrophysics in college. I also studied business economics, actually. I was a double major. And this was during the financial crisis, actually. So, you know, I had this mentor, Joanna, who was a trader. And I was telling her about like what I was learning in my economics classes. And she was just like, that is like totally like, why are they teaching you that? Are they not teaching you about like what's going on in the world right now? And I was like, no, like we're not learning about any of that. We never talk about that. And so together, we actually kind of, you know, talked with some of the heads of the economics department at UCLA. And, you know, I ended up kind of convincing them to, you know, create a seminar about the financial crisis or start introducing this into the curriculum. That was just really cool because it made me, I don't know, it made me just realize the limitations of just education or just to think for myself, you know, in life, you know. So that was one of my earliest mentors. More recently, Seek has lots of really smart advisors and investors just around us, you know, that I interact with almost every day. Definitely someone that has been a really big influence on me is Bob Muglia. He's, you know, the former CEO of Snowflake, who took it out of stealth mode, grew it all the way up until right before it IPO'd. And I just was so inspired by Snowflake. And, you know, he's one of the smartest people I've ever met. So, you know, I've learned a lot working from him. So, you know, that would be another big mentor that I would definitely shout out.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good one. How do you show up for people that are coming up? I mean, you're one of the smartest people that I ever met. And I wonder if, you know, there's folks out there that you mentor right now, or if you think about that, especially, you know, young women out there that are thinking about data and thinking about this industry. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I've actually said this before when I've spoken publicly, but I do feel like there are so many successful startup founders out there. Much, you know, their companies are much larger than Seek. And when I was just starting out, they took time out of their day, even like an hour out of their day, to just, you know, speak with me and, you know, give me advice. And I always was wondering, like, how are you able to just speak to me? Like, Yeah. That just kind of blew my mind. You know, they're so busy. Like, how are they able to take that time out of their day? So I kind of realized there is a correlation. I mean, there's also kind of like a lot of bias in this. You know, I wouldn't call this like a, you know, it's a purely data-driven decision. But I'm saying, like, I noticed, like, all the successful founders I meet met me. They took time out of their day to meet me, you know? So I'm just like, okay, there's something going on there where, like, if I didn't do this, I wouldn't be following that pattern, you know? So, like,
yeah,
I just think it's just very important to me to spend time with founders asking me for advice. I'm not, you know, I am very busy. I do feel like, you know, the bigger your company gets, probably the better you get at delegating and, you know, like, but, sure. But I always just try to make time like Friday night. That's when I dedicate some time to just meeting with founders that want my advice or want help.
I love that. That's great. Well, last question for you. I always ask this question, but it's a question that, you know, looks into the future as well. And it's, if you were going to describe the future of work in two words, what would those two words be? And then you can elaborate.
So this is going to require some elaboration for sure. But I would say everyone CEO. Yeah, I just say that because something that was very interesting for me becoming a CEO in the era of generative AI is that I'm telling everyone what to do. I'm telling people on my team, I'm telling ChatGPT, like, you know, I'm just giving a lot of instructions right now. And so, I mean, what's been kind of interesting is just noticing the parallels of when you're a CEO, you know, telling people what they need to be doing. What are the parallels of that versus, you know, telling ChatGPT what I need it to do? And I think it's just very cool for everyone to have the opportunity to be able to just, you know, you can have like 10 AIs working for you and be the CEO of your own virtual group of AIs. So I guess what I'm kind of getting at is, like, I think a big positive of AI and automation is that all the stuff that people don't like doing for the most part is very repetitive, is going to get automated because it's just so repetitive. But instead, I think people will have the chance to just do all that work at a snap of their fingers. So, you know, people will feel more like executives, I think, because they'll be able to just command all of this different work to get done for them, which I think is going to be very exciting for people.
I love that. Everyone's CEO. That's the first time anybody had those two words on the show. And I really like that a lot. Well, I really, really appreciate you coming on. Are you guys hiring right now? The audience would love to be able to follow up and reach out to you. What are the best ways to learn about Seek, reach out to you, and tell us more about the ways to contact you?
Sure. I mean, you can follow me on Twitter/X. It's just at Sarah R. Nagy, SARAHRNAGY. I'm on LinkedIn. Shoot me a DM, LinkedIn message. Happy to get in touch. Or go on our website, seek.ai. We are hiring. So yeah, those are a few ways that you can stay in touch with me.
Awesome. Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show. I learned a ton talking with you, and I'm really excited for what you guys are doing with Seek. I think there's a huge opportunity out there. And I'm thrilled that you came on. Thank you.
Me too. This was awesome. I really, really appreciate it. So thank you so much again.
That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. Such a pleasure to have Sarah as our guest on today's episode. Sarah's knowledge and experience in analytical AI and her desire to make it easier for business people to query their data is changing the way businesses search internally. If you want to learn more about Sarah, you can find her on LinkedIn and Instagram. If you're interested in how she thinks about AI and search, definitely connect with her and keep up with her posts and activities online. I continue to be amazed by the guests we've had on the show, and I'm excited about the ones joining us in the near future. I truly appreciate you spending your time with us.
Thank you for listening to this episode. And don't forget to subscribe to the Shift AI podcast for more exciting interviews and to the Simply AI weekly newsletter for updates on how AI can help you scale your business. The Shift AI podcast is produced and sponsored by Simply Augmented and distributed by GeekWire. Our theme music was created by Dave Anker.